ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
The soul is spiritual. Sri Prabhupada made some statement that if one engages oneself completely in this constitutional position, then what happens? All the other things will automatically become engaged because they all are inferior. The intelligence, the mind, the center there, and the body, they all are inferior to the soul. So if one can understand what is the true nature of the soul and situate the soul in its true nature, then all the other things will follow along with that. So that's where we began talking about the Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunatha Bhakti. So we understand the secret, the purpose is here. Therefore the soul is above all, namely the sense objects, the senses, the mind, intelligence. Therefore, directly understanding the constitutional position of the soul is the solution of the whole problem. If you want a solution to the whole problem, you understand what is the constitutional position of the soul. So the constitutional position of the soul is to be a servant of Krishna. I was quoting the discussion between Sanatana Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In Sanatana Goswami, in question Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu said, Jura Sarpahal, Krishna Dintadar. He said, to be a servant of Krishna is the natural propensity of the soul. In that connection, you have to remember we are talking about service to serve and to love. We are discussing that. And then he said, if we try to situate ourselves in that relationship, then no separate endeavor will be required to control the mind or intelligence or the senses. So one has to situate oneself as Krishna's servant, but for doing that we have to do sadhana bhakti. Then in that respect, all whatever you said can. Then we talk about sadhana bhakti. Then we have, in sadhana bhakti there are two categories. What are the two categories? In sadhana bhakti, as Vaidhi bhakti and Raghunatha bhakti. Vaidhi and Raghunatha. Vaidhi means, what does it imply? Yes, vidhi, exactly. Rules and regulations. Vaidhi bhakti. And Raghunatha bhakti is spontaneous. That's a more advanced approach. So Vaidhi Bhakti, you are talking elaborately about Vaidhi Bhakti. How? In the stage of Vaidhi Bhakti, as Ramana was telling now, that it is very bitter in the beginning, like jaundice person drinking sugar can juice. It's all those things. Then when one comes to Raghunatha Bhakti, one performs spontaneous and renders devotional service in spontaneous life. And then what else is after that? I was talking about Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunatha Bhakti. Bhagavati and Prema Bhakti, that's ultimately said. Yeah. Yeah. Why did I talk about Vaishnava last time? What was the purpose? The last class, is it? Yeah?
Somebody approached Chaitanya
Mahaprabhu and
asked him, who is the Ali Abraham? Ali Abraham,
yeah.
Anybody
who takes Krishna's name,
second time
he says,
one
who
chants constantly, he's a Vaishnava.
Yes.
And the third time he says, the person when he sees the Vaishnava, he starts chanting
the name. He's the Vaishnava. So in what respect did I make the statement about the Vaishnava? I was telling about how one is constantly situated in his constitutional position, such a Vaishnava. Yeah, actually before we came to Vaidhi and Raghunatha Bhakti, we quoted that. That means I made the statement that one has to situate oneself in constitutional position. Then one can solve the whole problem as well. Then immediately we talked about the Uttama Adhikari, how Uttama Adhikari behaves. But can he behave like that? We cannot. So what should we do? Then we came to Sadhana Bhakti. So we have to go from Sadhana Bhakti, Vaidhi Bhakti, Raghunatha Bhakti, and then we can come to Bhava and then we can come to Prema Bhakti like that. Very correct. Anything else, sir? So, one point again, I would like to recapitulate that here he says, Indriyani Parangati Indriyata Paramanaha, that earlier Sri Krishna said, out of the senses, the mind and intelligence, which is easiest to engage?
The senses.
Senses. Because they are immediately available to you. Immediately you can control, engage them. Such as this, Tasmatram Indriyani Adav Nyanya Paratarshada. It begins from Indriya. Kamanam Pradishyana Jnana Vijayana Vashana. So when you first engage the senses, but when you are trying to engage the senses, there is going to be a rebellious attitude from the mind and the intelligence. Because the intelligence is not sufficiently pure, and the mind is naturally impure, and you comes in contact with the material nature, the senses, you know, although you want to engage them, they may not obey. For example, waking up in the morning, bowing down before the Lord, bowing down before deities, performing arati, performing services, body may not cooperate, body may rebel. That is one does not hear the rebellion of the mind. I again make the statement. From why should we hear the instruction? But intelligence, why should he get the instructions? It's a special master. Then by hearing the instructions, one engages one's senses by hearing the instructions of spiritual master, even if it is not pleasurable. It need not be pleasurable. If it is pleasurable, it's well and good. If it is not pleasurable, even if it is not enjoyable, still one should do it as if a diseased patient is taking a medicine. Like that, one should engage one's mind and senses. So when one does like that, engages the senses, then gradually the mind becomes subdued and controlled. And then Krishna makes, how should one use intelligence? The last shloka of the chapter, Krishna says, evam buddhi param buddhva samstabhyatmanam atmana dhishaktum mahabaho kamarotam virasatam. That knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, they may be armed Arjuna. One should study the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, and that by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So, in the last chapter, Krishna is concluding this chapter, third chapter, Karma Yoga, saying that one should know oneself to be transcendental. How can you know that you are transcendental? Then it becomes, how can you know you are transcendental? Yes? How can one know that I am transcendental? Through spiritual intelligence. Before he came to Krishna consciousness, he had no knowledge of how the three modes are acting upon us, how we are suffering, how we are being controlled, and how we are undergoing the cycle of death and death due to our past, due to our activities. These things are never known to us. But when we have the spiritual intelligence, then we come to know. Evam buddhe param buddhva. That means, one should achieve the superior knowledge by engaging one's intelligence, spiritual intelligence, Krishna says. So this chapter ends, the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita is ending, where Krishna makes a statement that one needs to have transcendental knowledge in order to go beyond the urges of the mind and the senses. One needs transcendental knowledge. Without knowledge, there is no possibility of controlling this insatiable enemy, lust. So that is the conclusion of the third chapter. And that becomes the beginning of the fourth chapter, which is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. So now we are going to fourth chapter today. In the fourth chapter, we will talk of one slot today. The text number 1 to text number 10, there is transcendental knowledge about Krishna. There are different sections. The first section of the fourth chapter, ranging from slokas 1 to 10, talks about the transcendental knowledge between telling knowledge about Krishna. The first three slokas, Imam Vasata Yogam Pratyanam Yogam, in that, and the second and third, Krishna is talking about how this Bhagavad Gita knowledge is not new, which was already spoken long before, and Krishna is repeating this knowledge to Arjuna now, in the slokas 1 to 3. Then in the fourth and fifth sloka, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. In 4, 5, 6, there is a discussion where Krishna establishes his position as being all-knowing, that he knows the past, he knows the present, he knows the future. That is why he could give Bhagavad Gita millions of years ago, and now he is also giving to Arjuna. So Krishna can remember everything. And then in 7 and 8, Krishna talks about his own advent, Vedayadahi Dharmasya, and then Paritrana Sadhana, in the 2 shlokas. And then in 9th and 10th shloka, he's telling something very important. He's telling one who knows his appearance and activities, such a person, what will happen to him, how he can be delivered from this world. So this is all coming under the category of transcendental knowledge about Krishna. So, lotus 1 to 10, all the lotus. And today we can see one or two. Please respond.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Imam Divasyate Yogam,
Imam Divasyate Yogam,
Dattavanaham Avyayam,
Dattavanaham Avyayam,
Divasyannaname Praha,
Divasyannaname Praha,
Manavikshvata Vedavi,
Manavikshvata Vedavi.
The personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Yuvashwan, and Yuvashwan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. So this is the first text of chapter number 4, where Krishna is telling Arjun that, my dear Arjun, your knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is a very ancient knowledge. Do not think it is spoken to you for the first time. This knowledge of Bhagavad Gita has been coming down the ages, passed down to the saintly kings. There are two ways in which knowledge is given down, one is by Sant Parampara, another is by Rajarishi Parampara. So this is the Parampara of Rajarishi that Krishna is talking about. He is telling how Vivaswan gave it to Manu, Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. They were all very great kings coming in the Suri Vamsh. There is Suri Vamsh and there is Chandra Vamsh. So these kings are all coming in the Suri Vamsh. So Krishna says that one of the Suri Vamshes is Vivaswan. Vivaswan, to whom I gave the knowledge several millions of years ago. And Vivaswan gave it to Manu and Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. So the duty of the kings is to receive the transcendental knowledge and understand it themselves and practice it and give it to the people in society. That is considered one of their most important activities. Especially anybody taking the role of a protector or a guide, like for example the executive head of a state or the king or the father of a son, the father, or the teacher, or spiritual master. All these people are taking leading roles in society, and they all need to know the transcendental knowledge. And it is very important for them, because they act as guides for so many others in society. So one of the obligations that is expected as a king is to learn this knowledge himself and practice it, and give it to the cause of people in general. So it was rightfully done by kings like Vivaswan. Prabhupada gives a detailed note of how this knowledge was given to Vivaswan long ago. For that, we need to do some mathematics calculation. Kaliyuga, in which we are living now, it consists of 432,000 years. And Dwapara Yuga is almost double, say 8 lakh years. And Treta Yuga is almost triple, 12 lakh years. And Satya Yuga is 4 times, 16 lakh years. So all these 4 ages put together is called as one Divya Yuga. So it consists of how much? 33 lakhs. 33 lakhs all put together. This is one Divya Yuga. So in this is one Divya Yuga, and 1,000 Divya Yugas put together constitute one Brahma's day. In one Brahma's day, there are 14 manas. That means how much is the period of one manu? One manu is 71 millenniums. So 1,000 millenniums constitute one Brahma's day. So one manu's period is 71 millenniums. So 71 into 14 will get 1,000. Presently we are living in the period of Vaivashvata Manu, the same manu whose name is mentioned here as Manu. So we are living in the period of Vaivashvata Manu, and 20th millenniums have already passed. So Krishna says that he gave the knowledge of Vivaswan, and Vivaswan gave it to Vaivashvata Manu. So therefore here gives us a calculation how you want me to write on the board. Is it clear for you, or should I write on the board? I can write here. Yeah. can be announced later on again. Can stop looking at the speaker. That means 12 plus 8, about 20 lakh years ago, that's 2 million, isn't it? 2 million years ago, Manu received the knowledge from Vivaswan, from Vivaswan. And when did Vivaswan receive it? That is, that will come to, as I told you, Brahma's period. Thousand millenniums. Brahma's one day is called as, it is thousand millenniums. So thousand millenniums is divided into how many? 13 manus are there in one Brahma's day. So every manu has 17 millenniums. So there are many manus, like Saratisha Manu, Chakshisha Manu, and different manus are there. Now which period of which Manu's period is going on, you know? Presently, he is the seventh Manu. Seventh Manu's period is going on. His name is Vaivashvata Manu. That's what we are talking about. Vivaswan, Manavai Prahavi, he says, no? But Manu, who is Manu? He is Vaivashvata Manu. He is the seventh Manu. And in seventh Manu's period, Vaivashvata Manu's age is 17 millenniums. And within the 17 millenniums, presently 28 millenniums are over now. So, only 28 millions are over in the period. So, we are somewhere in here in between. So, this is the 8th Manu's period. So, we are somewhere. Out of 71, if you take 28, in the Bhagavad Gita, if you want to see, you can see. Prabhupada has made a calculation here. It says, there's some 2 million years ago, Manu spoke the Bhagavad Gita to his disciples. This exactly comes ahead. I checked with the calculator. If you check, you will see the 28 millenniums period if you calculate according to this. Period is given, you will get the number which is given there. So that's how the Vivaswan gave the knowledge to Vaivashvata Manu, and Manu gave it to Ikshvaku, and then the knowledge was coming down. We may have to discuss something which is not directly related to this topic about. Like we were discussing about Brahma, or we were discussing about Manus, faith in Manus. One of the most basic understanding we should have is about how every planet in this universe is filled with living entities. As far as science is concerned, scientists have been analyzing some of the planets and said maybe there is no life on this planet. Why there is no life? Because there is no air available here, like breathing. Or in some planets there is no water available, or there is no light available. So in this way they have concluded there is no life in many planets. Like a couple of years ago they said there is no life on Mars. And a year ago they said there is life on Mars. They contradict that their own statement 1 year later, that some organisms are recently found in Mars. We think there could be life on Mars. That is our feeling presently. So this way, science is going on giving different types of interpretations about whether life is existing in other planets or not. And they have many other evidences, like unidentified flying objects. We call it as UFO. UFO. There are many books being written by many scientists about UFOs. How they have seen a flying saucer in the sky, and how some alien beings came to this earth in some regions of Russia. They have got down, they have taken some photographs. So there are many articles being published internationally about living beings on other planets. But as far as we are concerned, we take evidence from the Shastras. The Shastras say how this Brahmanda is made. The Brahmanda, Brahma Anda means, and the meaning of the word Anda is egg. So Brahma Anda means it is in the shape of an egg. So within this Brahmanda, there are 14 planetary systems. We are presently existing in the 7th planetary system, which is called as Martyloka. Above Martyloka, there are many planetary systems. There is Bhulok, Skalok, Mahalok, Janalok, Tapalok, Satyalok. Satya is the topmost planet, planetary system. Yeah, the first created living being, Brahma, decides. Similarly, below this Matalaka, there are holy standard systems like Atala, Atala, Vitalasitala, Mahatal, Rasatal, Talatal, and Tatal. So we are existing down below. So these 14 planetary systems are arranged within this Brahmanda, and the topmost planetary system is called as Satyaloka, that Brahma resides. And also, in the dawn of creation, they said that from the navel of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, or who is called as Pankajanadi, from this navel, Brahma was created, and Brahma, of course, the Lord created all the planetary systems by himself. But Brahma created all the living species in each of these planetary systems. And in order to rule the universe, Brahma has this Manu. Like present Manu, current Manu is called as Vaivashvata Manu. Not only Manu is taking care of the Brahma, and besides Manu taking care of the universe, there are also other predominating deities. These predominating deities, there for every planet, even for Bhumi, there is a predominating deity. Similarly, for moon or for sun or for any planet, there is a predominating deity. You say is Chandra, is Surya. When you talk of somebody to be Soma, he is the predominating deity of moon. Moon planet. Similarly, the predominating deity of sun planet, who is called as Vivaswan, as mentioned here. Then, when you talk of such predominating deities or living beings existing on other planets, it may appear to be a little strange for us because we are not used to this type of knowledge. It may not be easy for some people to digest this fact that there could be life on sun and there could be life on other planets. Prabhupada painstakingly explains, if you see, it is so natural to understand this concept. He is saying, just like if you see the ocean, there are so many aquatics living in the ocean. Although we cannot jump into the ocean and live for a long time, if you go into the ocean, probably you can survive for some time. Even if you are swimming, you can survive for maybe 3 hours. But there are aquatics which live, which are born in water and who live in water and who die in water, lifelong. Like you see a tortoise or a fish. So for you, such existence may be impossible because your body doesn't have the facility. But for an aquatic, he may be wondering how this man is existing outside water. How can he survive without water? He's a fool. And they may be thinking we are fools. But how are we able to live without water? So in this way, there are different material bodies that are offered by Brahma to different living beings in different parts of the universe. And according to their body, they have atmosphere and they have a particular body due to which they are able to survive in a particular atmosphere. Like in sun, you see the sun planet is a fiery planet. So there are living beings who have fiery bodies who can survive even in the sun planet. For scientists, it was something unimaginable a few years ago. They thought no living being can exist in fire. Because beyond a certain temperature, the body will burn into ashes. So in fire, how can some living being exist? Then, later on, scientists, by the research, they have found that there is something called fire bacteria existing even on this planet, even within fire. So in this planet, if some living beings could exist in fire, then why not in sun? In sun planet also, there are some living beings existing. In the same way, everything in nature is predominated by a personality, by a person. Like you all must be knowing the past time when Lord Ramachandra wanted to cross, make the Setupandan. He called the Samudradev, isn't it? The Samudradev came because he is in charge of the ocean. Similarly, there is somebody in charge of the river. Similarly, there is somebody in charge of every planet. There is dominating deity for each and every one of these things. Although it may appear fantastic for us, too fantastic for us, how can such dominating deity be there? Everything is happening automatically. This is the kind of scientific thought that is being taught in the schools right from young age, that everything is happening automatically. But if one has common sense, one can ask, even a small mechanism, like even a simple circuit board, to make a small simple circuit board, it takes so much intelligence. Like one time scientists wanted to devise a detailed molecule. 99 scientists came together all over the world from 11 countries. And they worked for several years to devise, synthesize this one detailed molecule. You see, there are so many things existing in nature which have so much order and so much design in all different parts of the universe. Like you just see a beautiful flower like hibiscus or a rose. There is so much design in that. you see the waterfalls, you see the mountains, you see the minerals available from this earth. So much volumes of air, so much volumes of water, so much light, all the things are made available all over the universe. So, not only the earthly planet, for that matter, every planet in the universe is all predominated by living entities. Sarvagatam, the word is used in the second chapter. Sarvagatam, the living entity is occupying the entire Brahmanda. It is there everywhere. In every nook and corner of the Brahmanda. Sometimes you may think the living beings may not exist in this particular region. But we may not be able to see them, but they are existing in so many places. And God, being the merciful father of every living being, is also providing for every living being a nook and corner of the universe. One time, Arjuna and Krishna had a discussion about how living beings are going to be protected in this well. Who is maintaining them? So Krishna told Arjuna, he go down the well and he lifts that stone and see what is there. Arjuna lifted the stone and he saw a small ant carrying a rice particle in his mouth. So even the living beings in nook and corner of the universe are all provided and accepted by the Supreme God. And the Lord, with the intention of giving service to his devotees, namely the demigods, has appointed them inside of the various departments. Like now, India is such a small patch of land compared to the entire globe. There, if you want to control water, you have water minister, isn't it? You have minister for education. You have minister for so many activities, and that minister has so many assistants to help them. For a small patch of land, if you need so many ministers, there is chief minister, there is governor, and there is minister for every department like that. And then there is the Prime Minister of the small patch of land, India. You take a globe and see what is the size of India. Yes, we will need so many leaders to take care of this country, and we are assisted by so many others. How foolish it is and childish it is to think that the entire universe is managed by itself. There is nobody predominating, or there is no dominating deity. So everything needs to be organized and arranged, and it cannot be done without a predominant living being. And they are called as the demigods. Demigods are inside the various departments. Like for example, let us take the example of the rain, how the rain comes to this earth. Scientifically, we can give some reasons that the sun absorbs the water and it goes into the sky in the form of clouds, and the clouds are impelled by the wind to the land, and the clouds come, and the clouds shower. Then there is heavy rains. And then the rains put the rivers back into the ocean. So science may explain how things happen, but science cannot explain why things happen. Okay, the rain is happening like this. But why? Why should it happen? So we can put a counter argument that let it not happen. Let rain not take place. Why should the rain take place? Science has no answer. There are so many things taking place in nature which science can tell us how they take place, but they cannot tell us why it should be like that. For example, the earth is given a very nice layer of ozone layer, which scientists know pretty well that it is a protective layer by which we are protected from the ultraviolet rays coming from the sun on us. But the question is, why a ozone layer? What is the reason? Why should we at all have a ozone layer? Let it not be there. Let every living being suffer with some diseases like cancer by not having the ultraviolet, by through the ultraviolet rays. Why should that be a protective layer? They cannot answer. The people who are God conscious, they can understand that every arrangement that is made in the nature is made by our loving Father Krishna. He has given a protective layer so that we will not have to suffer from diseases. But the foolish scientists, they send carbon monoxide to deplete those layers so that the ultraviolet rays can come inside and harm the living beings. Similarly, the rain comes. Why? Krishna explains, why should the rains come? Remember? Annatavantiputanu Tarjanyadana Sambhavaha Tajnandavati Tarjanyu Vajjan Karmatamuddhavaha. So he says, without the rains, there won't be grains. Without the grains, the living beings cannot subsist. They cannot exist. So this is the arrangement made by the Lord, how the living beings should survive. So scientists think, with our limited few grams of brain, we can explain the entire universe, that everything is happening by chance. This is their argument, that everything is happening by chance. That is one thing deeply one can understand, that even a small, what is because of state, even a small firm cannot be managed. You see, in Kundigar is a small temple, we have so much management, isn't it? In order to bring about RTPS, we had 8 meetings. In a small firm, or a temple, or organization, or a charitable institute, even there, to run the show, It takes so much energy and effort. No? If any of you own a company, you will know. That the other people will know. No? If you own a company, how much difficult it is to run a show, run a small company. In order to run a state, it's much more difficult. In order to run India, it's far more difficult. In order to see that the entire globe is peaceful, that is never to happen. But we are saying that it is so difficult, even if one tries. That, to run the entire universe, how much Brahma has to break his head? So, that's why Brahma has four heads, so there are four directions. To manage the affairs of the entire universe. With all the support of all the demigods, who are predominating different planets as well as, they are predominating different departments, like water, fire, air, so on and so forth. So, the philosophy that is present in the scriptures is purely personal. It says everything is made possible only because of the predominating deity. So the first one is the predominating deity of the sun planet. We read about verse 1 in other places also. In many other places in the Shastras where we get description about the verse 1. So Krishna says, to this verse 1 I gave the knowledge first. From him comes all the fairy ones, all the kings coming in fairy ones. Krishna appeared in Chandravansh and Ram appeared in Suryavansh. So the Suryavanshis, they all are one after another, they were given this knowledge. But subsequently Krishna says, although this knowledge was coming down, the next step that Krishna will say, it is Devam Parampara Pratam, Imam Rajasya Vidhu, Sakale Mega Mahata, Yogayanashta Parantapa. He says, the supreme science was thus received through the chain of desired succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So when it is coming down the ages, this knowledge was lost. It appears to be lost. But the Vedic knowledge can never be destroyed. It's never to be destroyed. Like one time, at the end of the millennium, then Brahma was feeling a little sleepy. He was about to sleep, carrying the Vedas. That time when demon came, and they stole the Vedas from him. And then Lord Hayagriva came to recover those Vedas and give it back to Brahma. Of course, the Vedic knowledge, I ask this question, how can Brahma, such an intelligent person, he is the controller of the entire universe, how somebody can go to his house and steal the Vedas? How is it possible? Then I got the explanation that actually it is not a physical stealing, it is like the sound vibration could be stolen. That is at a very subtle level. So Shamantu was explaining about that. So even if the Vedas are stolen, the Lord will not allow it. Lord will again come to recover the Vedas and give it to his obedient devotees so that they can follow. Now we see that the knowledge appeared to be apparently lost. As soon as Krishna knew about it, he immediately came to this world. And he is telling Arjuna, see Arjuna, knowledge appears to be lost, but I am again going to give you. We will derive that knowledge so that it can continue for the benefit of the souls who want to surrender to Krishna and achieve perfection in their lives. But how can knowledge be lost? There are many reasons for that. The knowledge has to be taught by the Brahmanas. Brahmanas are those who are intellectual class people who are faithfully following the scriptures themselves. They have the qualities Sama, Dhamma, Tapa, Satsang, Shanti, Rajavan. They have all the qualities. Peacefulness, austerity, self-control. With all the good qualities of Brahmanas, they do the activity of disseminating this knowledge, giving it to the people in general. And the Kshatriyas, that is their speciality. They are heroic and they are powerful. So Kshatriyas make people in general available for hearing this knowledge. The duty of the Kshatriya is to build a huge temple in the middle of the city and get all the people there, gather them there, and take help of the Brahmanas to give the knowledge of Vedas to the people in general. Why should the Kshatriya do that? Because the people in general, if they are not interested in Vedic culture, then you want to live like Shudras, of low quality, with no cleanliness or no achara, then you want to live like that. But it is the duty of the kings to make big temples and help the Brahmanas to preach and help the Brahmanas to get the people to the temple by which they can get this knowledge and people can have a change of life by hearing the Shastras, which may be like a medicine in the beginning, but which is the real nectar for the soul, which is actually meant for the soul, but that is in which they can become purified. So Kshatriyas would do that by taking help of the Brahmanas. But when the Brahmanas became corrupt, at one time, the Brahmanas are the intellectual class people. But when they become corrupt by taking help of the same Kshatriyas, they can misinterpret the Kshatriyas. And they became corrupt. When they became corrupt, the Kshatriyas thought, why should we follow the corrupt Brahmanas? We have so much power. So with our power, we will do everything. So when Kshatriyas wanted to act independently, then it is called a dictatorship, like Hitler. When Hitler, he wanted to exercise everything by his own power. Then when dictatorship came to success, then everything became spoiled. And the Vaishya thought, without us, how can Kshatriyas survive? We are the money-producing people in society. Without the Kshatriyas or Brahmanas, they cannot survive. So they wanted to dominate. Then arose capitalism. Capitalism came to success. And they thought by capitalism we will finish everyone else and we will only exist. And then the Shudras, they thought without us, how can the higher three classes survive? One specialty of Shudras is they are in majority. Madhura, very easy to find a Shudra, or have to find a Brahmana. So they thought we are in majority and we will dominate the other three classes and we will rule. And then arose communism. So in this way, all the so-called designs, they started cropping in, and gradually everything became and degraded, little by little by little. And the knowledge was lost, apparently lost. Very rarely people knew about this knowledge. Very few were following it. Now Krishna comes here in picture where he wants to make Arjuna the recipient of this knowledge. And Arjuna was so famous in his times. Can even now, through Bhagavad Gita, as we know about Krishna, Arjuna and the Pandavas, from Mahabharata. So he is giving his knowledge to Arjuna and he wants this knowledge to go on to the people down the ages. Today, Krishna Bhagavad Gita is a universal scripture. Even scientists, philosophers, scholars, everyone appreciates Bhagavad Gita. It is so much known all around the world. Of course, the real purpose of Bhagavad Gita can be understood only if one follows a pure devotee in the Vedic succession. Otherwise, one may appreciate the slokas. Some places you go, people, you see them reciting chapter-wise slokas, but having no knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, or not practicing Bhagavad Gita. So if you want to practice Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, evam parampara praptam imam rajasyavitaka. He says one has to accept the knowledge in parampara. So the Purana, Padma Purana explains how the knowledge comes in parampara. It says there are four paramparas, Sri Sampradaya, Ritra Sampradaya, Kumar Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya. We are coming in the Brahma Sampradaya. Our Sampradaya is called as Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So in Brahma Sampradaya, the knowledge was first given to Lord Brahma and it was coming down the ages. Similarly, in Sri Sampradaya, which is followed in the South India, actually Brahma Sampradaya is followed in many places like Bangladesh, West Bengal, Eastern part of Bengal. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the most prominent person because it's Krishna himself who came in this parampara and he propagated this knowledge. And now today it is present all over the world because of the preaching movement established by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Dasam Sastri and Srila Prabhupada coming in this land. And Sri Sampradaya, the prominent acharya is Ramanujacharya. And Sri is Lakshmiji herself. So God gave the knowledge to Lakshmi and then it is coming down the ages. Similarly, Kumar Sampradaya was knowledge was given to the Chatish Kumaras, who are sons of Dhamma. The four, Sanat Kumar, Sanatan, there are four Chatish Kumaras who are sons of Dhamma, who were Master Dhammacharis. To them he gave knowledge, the Lord gave knowledge. And then Rudra is Shiva. Lord also gave the knowledge to Shiva. So the four different recipients, they took the knowledge from the Lord and they gave it down in the deserted land. Even today you will see the Pushtamargis, if you see in Gujarat, they are also coming into present today. So in this way, the Lord says the knowledge comes in parampara and anyone who connects himself to this parampara can be enlightened about the spiritual truths. Connecting oneself to parampara is something like connecting ourselves to the nearest electricity board. When you connect yourself to ED, you can have illumination here. Of course, the ED, there is one ED, there are many EDs all around. And they all are connected to the hydroelectric power station. From that, the electricity is actually coming. And there is a person who is operating the entire unit, and he is Krishna. Krishna is the original source of all knowledge. And he is giving the knowledge to different people. And from them the paramparas are coming, like that. So it's a very vast tree. Even if you see our great Abraham Sampradaya, like Brahma Sampradaya, if you take Brahma Sampradaya itself, it's like a very big tree. The lesson in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Lord Chaitanya is appearing in this Sampradaya. From Lord Chaitanya, there are many followers of Chaitanya. There are so many followers of Chaitanya. And from each of them, they have disciples. And their disciples, there were many. Like, a simple example. Like in our ISKCON, we have Raghunath Maharaj, Lakshar Maharaj, we have Acharya Raj, Lokanath Maharaj. They all are coming in the same time. They are contemporaries. And they all have a common guru, who is Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada has God with us, like Bhakti Rakshal Sridhar Maharaj, like Puri Maharaj. He had many God with us. And they have also many disciples like that. So this tree is expanding further and further, all over. So this tree is a very large tree, coming from Brahma down afterwards from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sri Krishna says that in this way this knowledge is given down the ages. Devam parampara praptam inanda adhishwadhu. Next up, Atoshwata, we need a very elaborate understanding. So I will not discuss it today. Let's start here. Any questions? Or comments? The thickness of the earth layer is equivalent to the diameter of the Brahmanda. That means the thickness of the earth layer. And then also the water layer is 10 times the thickness of earth layer. Similarly, there is fire, which is 10 times the thickness of water. Then the earth, water, fire, air, ether, all are actually covering the Brahmanda. So it is something like a coconut. You have seen a green coconut? Now, if you take a cross section, it is so thick, and inside there is a small section there. The coconut is there. In the same way, the Brahmanda is like that. So this is one Brahmanda. Similarly, there are innumerable Brahmandas, Kota and Kota Brahmandas. And then beyond all of them is the Viraja River, which is also called as Vaitarani. The Vaitarani is a causal river which separates the material world and the spiritual world. While Mahavishnu is lying. So one has to cross the Vaitarani and then enter into the spiritual world. One has to go. So certainly the material difficulties will never be able to go to the spiritual world. Even if one touches the covering of the Brahmanda, one will not be able to cross over all them. It's impossible. Yeah, every universe has its own sun. Yeah.
But all the
Brahmins
are fake.
Yeah.
And they cannot
be sensible.
But
Manu
is
the first of the first. No, Sambhav Manu is the name of the person. But Manu is the first. Like Manu, all I call is Manu only.
Yeah.
I was telling you, first in the Sakshisha Manu. Yeah. As far as others are concerned, I doubt whether they are sent for Manu. But they all are actually incarnations. I don't think they are sent for Manu, all of them. No. As far as I know, we can. Yeah. But here, this Manu, he says, no, proper explained. Now, Ikshvaku is the son of Daivashvata Manu, he says. But Daivashvata Manu is the son of. It's mentioned here in this? It's not mentioned here. I don't think they all are sent for Brahma, no. So everyone is appointed at different times. But right from the dawn of creation, we know who are going to be the Manus for this particular day of Brahma. The present Manus is already given. Like after Vaishnava Manu, who is going to come is also given. If you read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, given who are the next Manus who are going to come.
Prabhuji, what are your views on conversion? For example, in Gujarat and all that, many Dalits and all are facing a lot of atrocities against themselves. So they are converting to another religion which they feel is better. So is it wrong or right to change the religion on that basis?
So, I mean, Prabhupada, you never paid much attention to this type of question. Because, you know, instead of having a clean shelter, you can have a long beard if you want, isn't it? And wear a cap and call yourself a Muslim. Or you can wear a cross and say, now I am a Christian. But if you very carefully observe those people who are getting converted, most of them are getting converted for material purposes. Like, for example, Christians come. They say, what do you want? Somebody says, oh, I don't have a house. I don't have money also to buy a house. They say, okay, take this house. Now you worship Jesus. Jesus has supplied you this house. So become a Christian. They conduct baptism. They baptize him and make him a Christian. And then somebody says, no, I want to marry. Okay, you marry our Mary. And we'll make you a Christian. Here is a beautiful girl for you. So, when you make him a Christian, and the boy agrees, so now nobody is giving me a girl, these people are giving me an ass girl to marry and they become a Christian. This is how they make Christians everywhere, very cheaply. The Prabhupada never paid any attention to such conversion. Even the whole world is converted, ultimately people's hearts are not transformed, that's for this. The real meaning of accepting religion means, even many people claim to be Hindus, but they actually are Hindus. Many people are beating on the chest saying they are Hindus. But what kind of Hindus? They don't know one verse in Bhagavad Gita. They don't know the meaning of one verse from Bhagavad Gita, if you ask them. Many of the people who are writing amongst themselves in Hindus and so-called Hindus, you see, they have no understanding. So some people say, when these Christians are arguing that you Hare Krishnas are going to America and converting our Christians into Hindus, they are saying. But actually, Prabhupada was not at all fanatical, not at all sectarian. In his times, he even allowed Christians to follow Bible. He opened the Bible in his books, you can see. He says, you follow, first of all, you follow your religion, he says. You are a Christian, you claim to be a pure Christian, you follow Bible. The Bible says, thou shalt not kill. They are killing animals. Prabhupada is asked like that. He was never having any intention to make the entire world into Hindus. Prabhupada's vision was so broad that he understood every living being is a servant of God. Whether he's a Christian or a Muslim or Hindu, even the soul in the body of an animal or a plant is also a servant of Krishna. So ultimately the purpose of life is to revive our love for God. That's the purpose. So Prabhupada says, if you can revive your love for God by practicing Bible, you practice Bible. That's also broad-minded. But these people are just very strictly converting. Why it became such a big issue in Gujarat? The reason is known now. Because they have been converting very cheaply. The other Hindus are becoming upset. And they are raising a voice. But we in our moment, we are not interested in such news. Because we will propagate the pure philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So in our mission, in our moment, we will see that in Madras, I have gone to Madras temple. There are two Christian boys who have showed up under a blind filter. And they told me they have translated 5 Prabhupada books into Tamil language. From English to Tamil, they have converted. So they are from Christian background, but they have become such serious devotees in our movement. So our movement is open for anybody who is a devotee. Let him belong to any religion, any caste, any color, we don't mind. So it's a very, very broad religion. We are not interested. We don't tell people, no, if you become a Hare Krishna, we will give you this. We are not offering anything like that. If somebody assumes something is being offered, then it's a fool. So somebody thinks by joining us, kind of going to America. That's foolishness. We don't offer anything. In fact, you know how much is demanded of you. Instead of offering you something, we demand so many things from you. You want to come, you want to become a devotee, you have to spend 15 hours a day. You have to spend 2 hours a day. And you have to give up. You have to give up meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex. Who will do that? Tell me. Christians are spreading so fastly when they are proud. But what quality of people are they creating? You have to ask this question. Everywhere they are proud of saying we have such a big group, we have made thousands of people into Christians. This anybody can do. Simply giving a name, like one sadhu in Bombay is initiating 10,000 people at one time, one stroke. He's saying, now I have 10,000 disciples. What one is there in there? Anybody can, Tom, Dick, and Harry can do that. So we are not interested in cheap religion like that. So let the world say whatever they want, we are going to maintain quality. And if we can increase our quantity, desired quality, we'll be very happy. Because the person who used to tell his disciples, when they go for teaching, sometimes nobody would come for the classes. So he told his disciples, you preach to your 4 walls, don't be afraid. Sometimes his disciples would go to distribute some books and nobody would buy the books. Nobody would be interested in spiritual knowledge. And they would just distribute one magazine and come back. And then his Saraswati would learn to them so much. So distributing the one magazine, he would say, oh, you have done such a great service to one suffering soul. You have given this knowledge. So that is our mission. We want to teach the pure philosophy. Those who want quality, they will come. They will not compromise. They will come. They will see the quality. Quality will attract quality. They will come. And they will also advance in spiritual life. And they can go back to Godhead. But he's saying, no pains, no gains, he says, isn't it? If you don't take pain, if you don't take trouble, you cannot advance in spiritual life. So there are so many cute reasons coming up, but let them go on. You are not interested in that. That Krishna himself gave. Oh, right. Because those who are appearing in the Surya cult, no? There are kings who also rule the earth. In the Surya Vamshi, there is coming Surya Vamshi, as I was telling you the example of Raghupati, no? Raja Ram. Ram did, no? That Ramachandra, he comes in this one, Surya cult, and he appeared on earth. Now that there are many who are coming, who appear on this earth, who are actually descendants of, who are in the coming of the lineage of Lord Swan, but also who rule the earth. Yes, sir. There are vivid descriptions. When we go several chapters, then we will be describing about many different passions where we will see interaction of people from one planetary system to another planetary system. There are, like we have travel from one country to another country, we also have interplanetary travel. Even Arjuna also traveled, yeah. Even Arjuna traveled. In those times. Arjuna was, they were all in Virata Vedas, and Arjuna went to the 100 times. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. See, actually, as I told you, the Satya, Treta, Dwapara, Kali, you know, there is only one Digga. Like that in one day of Brahma, there are 1,000 Digga Yugas. That means Satya, Treta, Dwapara, Kali. Again, Satya, Treta, Dwapara, Kali. Like that, there are 1,000 Digga Yugas. So, in every Satya Yuga, it is called as a golden age. Because the souls are generally very pure and they are interested very much in spiritual life. So, it is called as golden age when Treta is... Yes, that's true. Yes. So, Satya is called as golden age, and Treta is called as silver age, and Dwapara is called as bronze age, and Kali is called as iron age. Iron age industry is kind of. So, this is the degradation that takes place, and then at the end of Kali, it becomes so degraded that Lord will come as Kalki and kill all of them and die. Rather than later on again, the Satya will come. And the living beings, there will be dissolution also. There will be partial dissolution now, after this Kali Yuga. The partial dissolution will dissolve all the planets up to Mahaloka, I think. Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Janaloka, Bhur, Saha, Maha, Janha, Tapa, Satchan. Yeah, Janha, Tapa, and Satchan, they are saved. Other than these planets, the lower countries, they all are actually submerged in water. They will be annihilated. Like that. And then all the living entities in this, where can they go? They will be kept in the navel of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Adhira Krishna. He will be kept there. And then again, when Brahma finishes his sleep, after Brahma's night is over, Brahma's day will come. Then again there will be creation. Then these all these living bodies who are having an impending load of their backlog of karma, they will again take birth. And that way they will again take birth. Yeah. Huh? No. It's the 7th Manu, Rajasita Manu, and she has got 17 millenniums, right? In she 71 millenniums, now what is going on is 28 millennium, currently. In 28 millennium, now Satya, Treta, Dwapara is over. Now we are in Kali. After 28 millennium. Yeah, 28 millennium. Now 39 will come after that. Clear? One degree means Satya, Treta, Dwapara, Kali. Yeah, Kalpa, no, this Kalpa is called as, Kalpa is also Digga Yuga, correct. And this is called as Mahakalpa. This 1080 is called as Mahakalpa. Oh, sorry, 1080 is called as one Kalpa, and Brahma lives for hundreds of Kalpa. That is called as Mahakalpa. So this 1000 millenniums is called as one Kalpa. And Brahma, this is one day of Brahma, like if you take 100 years of Brahma, that is complete period of Brahma is called as Mahakalpa. So there is Mahakalpa, Mahapralaya, we call it. Mahakalpa is the beginning of creation of Brahma, and Mahapralaya is Brahma's end. Brahma also is finished. He lives at 3.1 trillion years, 40 billion years. Then after that, the entire Brahmanda is finished after that. Now if you see Brahma's age, Brahma has finished now 50 years of age. Out of his 100 years, he has finished 50 years. That means that half his lifespan is over. So we are almost to the moon of Brahma. Both are available. When meat is available and plants are available, then you say you should prefer vegetarian. So you should take only some plants. We can give you questions. We have a, fortunately, we have a devotee from the Arab countries. We have, what's his name? Airavatrabhu. He has written many books comparing Islam and Krishna consciousness. He has an OPR also. Yeah.
That, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, there are many very similar. He has given proper one-to-one comparison of Krishna consciousness philosophy and Quran. Because we have many quotes from Quran to show we should not kill animals. Unnecessarily. They were allowed because they live in deserts and they didn't have any vegetables to eat. So they were allowed to kill at the time. In Antarctica, and if they want to practice Krishna consciousness, how can they try that? Better they can shift to India after they learn. That's what many devotees do. If you see, sometimes you see many devotees going from one part of the world to another part of the world. Because as soon as they become Krishna consciousness, they know here I cannot get vegetarian food, so they go. According to Bhagavatam, if you see, Prabhupada explains that somebody is born in such places only because of that sinful activity. They are so sinful, like Kirata, Honandra, Pulinda, Pulakasa, Abhir, Nagara, Simpa, Kasada, essays, no? These are all different sinful people born in different places of the world. And they are so sinful that they are born in the midst of a place where there is no vegetables available. They have to eat meat only. They are created in such a situation. But if a few devotee goes there and intervenes in his life and says, to become Krishna conscious and helps him, then they can follow the few devotee and go to a place where they can get vegetables. And people have done it. It's there in a moment. You can show many evidences. How people from various regions have come. Just imagine Americans, they are, you know, staying in a country like India. Can you believe? There are so many Americans who have shifted to India because they are living in India in such a hot country like India. From America they have shifted here. They are able to live. How are they able to live? It's possible. For one who is very serious in Krishna consciousness, there is no impediment. Nothing is an impediment. Thank you very much.
There are different
theories.
The Bible says Adam and Eve. How is this?
No, actually, there are many similarities between Bible and other scriptures. For example, you have heard the story of Noah. Noah and the altar. You heard the story. Noah and the ark. Noah's ark, yeah. If you hear that story, you will see it's very similar to Satyavrata Muni's story. I asked this question to Maharaj about Adam and Eve also. So, Maharaj is telling, there are so many millenniums which have passed. In one of the millenniums, the Manu, which we call as Manu, they may call as Adam. Because if you see, we are, from this we understand, there are so many millenniums and so many Manus have appeared. And after the Pralaya is over, again when Satyuga comes, then there will be Prajani created, right from the dawn of creation. So, the Adam and Eve, if you see, they are in the dawn of creation. They are the first created living beings. If you see Adam and Eve. Of course, Ranath Maharaj explained the story about Adam and Eve, how that is basically describing the principle of envy. Like, you know the story, right, Adam and Eve?
Yeah.
You know the story, isn't it? Yeah, how did they get sin? God actually wanted them not to enter the Eden garden, the Garden of Eden, and where there was a fruit, a tree of knowledge. Yeah, yeah. So they ate the fruit. And after that they felt, now we cannot be naked, we have to wear the dress. So they want to wear the dress and God came and punished. So, Maharaj said it can be understood in two angles. If it is real story, then it could happen in one of the millenniums, which we are not aware from our scriptures. Even the Bhagavatam that we have doesn't talk about all the Manus and all the millenniums. It is not possible. It is so vast. So we have only descriptions here and there in Srimad Bhagavatam. So it could have happened in one of the millenniums. Otherwise it could also be an allegorical story. He said. So I have the same question to him. But if you see other things in the scripture, there are many things that are similarities to us. Like for example, I was saying in Quran that we mentioned about 8.4 million species of life. Like what we are talking in
from Padma Purana. There are many things similar like that. But this knowledge was given in different places to different audience at different times. But still, the basic essence of this knowledge doesn't change. It is the same in all religions. Like, all religions talk of surrendering to God, loving God, avoiding sinful activities, avoiding material pleasures, surrendering to spiritual master. So all these things are common in all religions. So the principle, if you take, there is no difference. Principle is the same.